Hi, welcome back to another episode of China on the Rocks, a podcast where we talk about food and beverage and everything in between that happens with us here in Shanghai, China. My name is Logan, and I'm joined by my cool, calm, collected, and compulsive co-host.
Hi guys, Anna here.
Hey Anna, what's going on?
Well, apart from the seasonal allergies, because it's springtime, we have an awesome event coming up in a couple weekends. We're doing a market together.
Yeah, we're doing Feast, so catch your podcast heroes in
Come
person.
Come and go have a drink.
We will take signed photos, we'll do autographs for you, we'll have shots with you, but we'll be at Feast. What's the dates of Feast?
Feast is happening 31st of March, 1st and 2nd of June, so Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, so that'll be super fun. It's at Sina Mansions, so it should be high foot traffic. They're expecting like 8,000 people a day, they told me. So we'll see if that's really a real number.
But don't be scared. That will be fun. And today we're also having our traditional or classical shot. What are we drinking?
We are drinking a Reposado 1800 tequila from 1800.
Oh, delicious. Cheers.
Cheers. It's so nice. I didn't want to shoot it all.
Same. I'm like tasting it.
I really, really like good tequila.
And today, what are we talking about, Logan?
So we had a kind of a kerfluffle. By we, I mean me as the sound engineer. We recorded this podcast on Cinco de Drinco last week or 2 weeks ago. And then I was so busy that I hit the wrong buttons and I had a metronome going over half the audio and we posted it. Our good friend and listener, Kyle, was like, Logan, you need to take this down as fast as humanly possible. So we are re-recording all new everything. We're not using anything old. We're recording it live as we go.
Yeah, no script. So I don't even know if we're going to say the same things this time.
Yeah, no script. Yeah, we have no idea. I mean, at the end of it, we never know really what we're saying anyway. But so, I mean, what we learned, there was a cool, cool, shocking revelation from last time we recorded this. And that Anna used to have a nickname, a street name.
A street name, yeah. The gang name.
Gang name. And you want to tell us what it is?
I'm not supposed to call out my own street cred, Logan.
Okay, so her name used to be called Anna Agave.
Yes, for a long time, pre-COVID world, I used to do a lot of education programs, a lot of shifts and a lot of events based on agave spirits. So I've always specialized in agave spirits. It's always been my baby. And yeah, then we had a kind of a little thing happening in the world and traveling became a little weird and the focus of things changed a little bit. And yeah, but it's good to go back to the roots.
Yeah, it's good to be back. So, I mean, what we want to talk about today, I mean, it's tequila, I feel like, is a really fun, again, another summer thing, like the gin we talked about last time.
Yeah, I think we started that conversation that day because we're talking about Cinco de Mayo, and we started talking about how Latin spirits in general have such a popularity in China.
That's true, yeah.
We don't know why. I mean, I can guess why, because it's happy and lively and fresh, but people in China really, really like anything Latin. So we're talking about like anything South American or Mexican. You can go to the tiniest of town in China. That's going to be two foreign places. One is going to be like an Irish pub and one is going to be a taco place.
Yeah, I feel like anywhere you go in the world now, always an Irish bar. And then, yeah, taco places. I think it's the colors.
I mean, generally the Irish, I think, is more like a pub. So yeah. I always have like either English or Irish or the whole like lots of Jameson, beers on tap and kind of like older man atmosphere, classic pub.
Yeah, it's classic pubs.
And then they always have a Latin place, usually like a Mexican place, usually a taco place. And weirdly enough, tequila is quite popular in China.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's fun about tequila is I remember when Carlos Santana, he had this really great tequila and they were trying to make this big push for it, right? And so basically I was running a nightclub at the time called Muse on the Bund. And it was one of those tables, those places where everybody buys tables. There's DJs, there's performers. Like you had Raz B from B2K there as one of our house rappers. Like, but it was bottle service everywhere. Was not uncommon for millions of R&B to be spent in a night. It was just crazy busy nightclub. And so the Carlos Santana tequila people, the name escapes me right now, but it's a beautiful, beautiful bottle. Basically, they said if you sell enough bottles, we'll have Carlos Santana come here and sign bottles, or you could go get some. You'll meet Carlos, and we'll get you a guitar. And so our first night, I think we bought like the Calais Club bought like four pallets of tequila because they don't mess around there. And literally, it was our worst night of sales ever, and that is because everybody was buying the bottles. They made a package. It was like buy 10 bottles of tequila, 10 bottles of champagne, get a bottle of tequila or something. but everybody was just gambe, gambe, gambe with the tequila. And so by like 10:30, 11 o'clock, most of the tables were passed out.
By the way, the tequila is Casa Noble.
Casa Noble, thank you. It's a beautiful bottle too.
Delicious liquor too, great tequila.
Everybody was housed, because in China, what you do with champagne or like whiskey is you have little shot glasses. Champagne, you're just gumbaying glass after glass after glass. You're playing dice. It's super fun. But with tequila, I think it was people's first real time having tequila like that. And it was, this is 2013. And this is just, people were smashed. They'll be like, we can't do this anymore. We'd have it on the menu, but we can't do promotions with it.
I've noticed, especially in the last, like I would say, 6-7 years, that tequila used to be in China really appreciated by people that were more business people that traveled or educated abroad. But now you see the young generation, when they go out, they really want tequila shots.
Yeah.
I don't think they have caught on to what type of tequila they're drinking yet, or the quality of the tequila. They see tequila as this one blank statement, like vodka, like just tequila, and it doesn't really matter the brand. But I also think it's because they don't have the association that we had growing up, having a lot of really low quality tequilas. And then most people our age, they're from Europe or America. If you mention to them, let's have some tequila, they're like, oh, no, I don't drink tequila.
Yeah, they had that one bad time in college or whatever.
Yeah, but the Chinese don't really have that association, because it wasn't a thing going on here like 15, 20 years ago. So it's not really, people don't have that association, right? So they are still very like pure eye towards tequila, which is a great time to really like educate the market.
Yeah. I mean, the fun thing about tequila too, it's such a clean, like, especially if you're drinking just like tequila on the rocks or tequila neat, it's a very, very clean, for me, I feel it's a very clean drunk. Like, I feel fine the next morning. Like,
yeah, no, low hangovers for me too, really happy. I think that the problem is the whole market for really good tequilas is fairly recent. I think for a while we were drinking like the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
So for people at home, I think a lot of the bad associations that we have with tequila is what was called the mixtos.
Mm-hmm.
So mixtos are tequilas that they only need to have 50%, 51% of actually agave in it, like agave spirit. And the other half can be basically anything. Can be like a cheap grain spirit, can be a cheap rum or whatever they kind of produce. And they mix it to make it like be cheaper for the production, but also produce more bottles. And the problem is those are, you have a lot of regulation on the tequila half, but you don't have a lot of regulation on the other side. So they tend to be pretty low quality. And they are the ones that like mess you up. Also, they add sugar, they add caramel, they add a lot of additives to it.
Yeah, like if you see something that says gold, it's added to it. Versus you have like a... So let's talk a little bit tequila facts, and I think it's important we educate the listeners, because a lot of people just don't know that much. Like 2 days ago, I had a friend that was asking me at our High Seas Distillery, can you guys do Pisco? And I was like, I think we could do a lot of things. Like, how about tequila? And I said, unfortunately, we could do agave wine, but we can't do tequila. And they're like, why is that? And I said, because tequila is regulated to certain areas in Mexico.
Pisco as well.
Pisco. Well, see, that's what I told them.
Yeah, you can make basically a grape spirit. So you can make something. Basically, cognac is also, if you think about just the production,
they're
right?
called DOCs,
Pisco,
correct?
Yes, correct. Denomination of origin. I don't know the translation. I think it's in French. But it's denominations of origin. And for cognac and Pisco, they're basically both made of grapes.
Yeah, exactly.
But they have completely different names because of the region and how they're doing. Pisco has a few more countries that can make, but you couldn't just make it in China and call it Pisco. So you have to call it a brandy.
Yeah.
So it'd be like a brandy, basically.
So, like, for tequila, like, we couldn't make tequila here. It has to be made in, I think, several different regions in Mexico.
So I might be outdated on the amount of states, but it should be 7 different states of Mexico. But 90-something percent of all tequila produces in Jalisco.
Yes.
Jalisco is a state. It's where the city of tequila is at. Tequila also has to be made with blue agave, which is the agave Weber, which is a type of agave, only that one. And there are basically a couple types of tequila. If you're at home trying to look for a good tequila, you need to look at the bottle and find 100% de agave or 100% blue agave, 100% agave Weber, or anything that shows 100% agave in any language, it's a style that will be. Because that means it's the whole bottle is just made with the agave spirit, and that's the purest tequila. Now, to just call tequila, like I said, we can have the mixtos, which is the ones that are only 51%, and it's just good enough to get the name.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's mezcals, which are kind of definitely a cousin or brother to tequila.
Definitely a cousin, yeah.
They're kissing cousins. Let's put it like that. They're kissing yeah. cousins. But we're focused on tequila. Like, for tequila, there's silver, there's reposado, and there's añejo.
Yeah, silver or blanco, right? In Spanish, it should be blanco. In English, it should be silver. So those are the... And again, this can also go for the white one, can go for mixtos as well, the same name. But let's talk about the 100%. We're not messing around with the mixtos here. We're not messing around with the blend.
You're the one that said the M word, not me.
Yeah, the M word. On the 100% agave, the blancos, they are unaged. Although every tequila has to rest for a few days, like 30 days in a stainless steel tank just to like calm that beast down.
Yeah, so stainless steel is why it doesn't have any color. It's not absorbing.
And no flavor, no nothing. It's really just to not get the alcohol so volatile in the bottle. So we have the blancos, and we have the reposados, which means rested. Yeah, rested. It's between 2 months and a year. And those are in oak barrels. And then you have the añejos, which is a year to 3 years. And then you have extra añejos that can be anything above 3.
Yeah, those are Maduros, but you're not going to see them that often. I mean, they do exist. People really focus on the añejos. And the reason being, kind of like high-age scotches, where you don't really see 30-year-old scotches anymore. You see 25-year-olds. It's just the need outweighs how much they have sometimes.
I also think that for agave spirits, they have such a specific flavor. If you age for way too long, it tastes more like oak. So it tastes more similar to something like a cognac or like a whiskey, and you kind of lose a lot of the agave note. So I almost feel like aging for too long, sometimes, again, depends on who's producing it. Some people are really good at aging their tequilas that it will taste delicious, even the very old ones. But generally, you lose a lot of the agave notes, right? So I don't necessarily even like, again, it's very specific to the brand. I like some añejos, but I'll stick to reposados and to blancos. I love a blanco.
Yeah, I mean, I like a reposado if it's just me. Like, I like a reposado, one big cube of ice and a cigar and a beach. Yes, please.
Yeah, and I
or even a movie about a beach.
And I think that a lot of people associate aging of a spirit with quality. And to be honest, it's really just a flavor choice.
Yeah, it's a flavor profile.
It's a flavor profile choice because the same producer, when you have a blanco or an añejo, it's the same tequila. It's just different stages of aging. And it's really like your choice of flavor. So don't think that it's a lower quality because it's unaged.
Like, exactly. Like, just like my age, I'm a reposado now.
You're a reposado?
You're still a blanco.
I'm still a blanco, thanks. Okay.
But soon I'll be an añejo.
You still have a few years left.
I still have a few years in the cast yet left. But I mean, I think with tequila, it's super fun. You have really cool drinking cultures with it because people know all around the world to drink it. Like, we both had the fortune to go to Mexico and go see how tequila is made.
Yes, a few times. And I love Mexico. For everybody that's listening this from Mexico, your country wins, like, top
it's
five
so
for me.
Much
like,
fun.
It's incredible.
So what I really found that was eye-opening, like, I grew up in New Mexico, and, you know, we have margaritas and everything, and I'm well-known for my silver coin margaritas here in Shanghai. Which are my hometown margaritas. But when I was in Mexico last time, palomas are such a thing. And paloma, it just means what?
Dove.
Dove. So basically a white bird. But palomas in Mexico, it's basically your white tequila. It's squirt. Squirt's a grapefruit soda. It's like a white grapefruit soda.
Yeah, they have two. And we discussed that because I don't know the flavors. They have two squirts.
So good. It's pink grapefruit and white grapefruit.
Is that or is it lime or something? Okay, yeah. But anyway, it's a great like soda.
That's the good thing about redoing this is like I can rethink, like I was right. Squirt is like a white grapefruit. It's so good, guys. But anyway, it's white grapefruit soda, squirt, and like
lime.
And that's it. And it's people don't drink margaritas. I mean, people drink margaritas everywhere.
Oh, with a salt rim.
With a salt rim, yes. People drink margaritas everywhere, of course. But in Mexico, it's really more Paloma focused. So much so that when you go to these really cool outlier bars in the small towns, they have big shot glasses that say squirt on them. Like, squirt provides the shot glasses.
Yeah, they are like the Coca-Cola chairs and dive bars. They are like the squirt chairs in Mexico. Yeah. Coca-Cola has a lot of stuff there, too.
Yeah.
What I think is also cool is that people always ask me, like, I have this discussion with a lot of customers. Sometimes we have, like, really good tequilas. Even, like, Silver Añejos or whatever, people come to the bar and they will order, like, let me have 10 shots. And you just set up the 10 shots and they're like, oh, no, I want them with salt and lime. And for me, it's like, sure, drink whatever you want. It's your drink. But there's a part of me that dies inside. Because traditionally, there's a lot of made-up stories about curing the flu, the Spanish flu, the this and that. I think was just a way to make it more palatable to drink shitty tequila back in the day.
Probably, yeah.
Probably just a way to like kind of create a ritual around it. It's good for marketing. It hides the flavor. But traditionally in Mexico, if you order a shot of tequila, which by the way, it wouldn't even be a shot. If you just go to a bar there and you order a certain tequila that you like, will come on a shot and you can sip it. You can shoot it. It's up to you. But normally it's just naked. It's just how it is.
Yeah.
If you go to very touristic places, they will give you salt and lime, but it's more because of the...
That's what people expect.
They think that that's what you expect. So there's a lot of that. But I think it comes because a lot of tequila drinks have lime, but also in Mexico, it's very common to use some salt element in their tequila drinks. We talk about the Paloma. We talk about even like Vampiro that you have on the side of the road and mm-hmm. all that. They always have a little like chamoy, which is like a sauce. It's like sweet and salty. And there's always a lot of like a salty element, which I love.
Now I want to touch back on Vampiros. Well, that's pause. Let's put a pin in Vampiro, because I want to talk about obviously the most famous tequila drink, margaritas.
Yes.
And so, for those that don't speak Spanish or don't know, margarita in Spanish just means
daisy,
and a daisy is a type of cocktail.
Yeah, it's basically a brother of the sidecar.
Yeah, it's a brother of a sidecar. So like. A cosmopolitan is the sister of a sidecar in that it's a daisy with vodka.
Well, a cosmopolitan is from the like late 80s.
Yeah,
like,
saying,
we know
like,
where it came from.
No, we know where it came from, but it's adding cranberry juice to basically a gimlet. Right?
Yeah, a vodka sour. But yeah,
a vodka sour. But you know what I mean? So like a lot of these things are connected. So margarita sounds more, ooh, it's a margarita. You're not saying I'm having a tequila daisy.
Yeah, but I would say that like... the Cosmo was more like somebody trying to improvise a drink on the go when using his knowledge from margaritas and from sidecars and all that, and just making a vodka drink like that. But
and just for those at home, too, sidecar is?
Sidecar is lemon, Cointreau or triple sec, and cognac.
I'm using Anna like Siri now.
Yeah.
Siri. Hey, Anna.
Yeah, and cognac. So and a margarita is classically, instead of a lemon, it's lime. It still has a triple sec and tequila.
And then, yeah, so, I mean, that's basically what margarita is, a daisy. So it's a play on a classic cocktail format. I mean, and what you see, like, margaritas are fantastic. We all know them. But then Anna had mentioned a Vampiro, which I hadn't really heard of before.
Yeah, I had it in Mexico. So it's commonly, like, you know how you have street food, you have street drinks in Mexico. They'll serve you in a bag.
And we're just talking about a bag. It's like a plastic bag.
Yeah, like it's a bag with a straw. Nice. It's not like a supermarket bag. It's like a clean bag, like a food grade bag, but still, like you just put your straw and you drink from it. When I was visiting a lot of like different palenques in Jalisco for a lot of raicia, which is Jalisco's version of mezcal,
mm-hmm.
to simplify, we stopped by this place that sells Vampiros, and they're basically tequila, squirt, something like orange juice, or you can choose a few flavors, and they have a syrup that they add to it that I don't know what it is. It's like a fruity, a little salty, a little like a chamoy or cherry, and that's it. So the whole drink is red.
Hence Vampiro.
And it's delicious. Like crushable, especially in the hot day. They put a lot of ice in that bag too, and you just go around sipping on it. And yeah, so you see a commonality of drinks in Mexico. They always have a little sour element, the alcohol, and then a little salty element, a little sweet. So it's
it's a very good flavor profile along the lines of like they kind of hit everything one glass, which is what I really like. And it's simplistic. Like the process of making tequila is different than anything I've seen really. Like if you go like the old school way, it's really fun to see it. So basically, you have and Anna definitely will correct me because she loves doing this. Basically,
not that bad.
You have an agave plant. And these are heavy. People don't understand it, but these are heavy beasts.
The cool thing about the agave plant that I think that's the missing part that people don't understand the value of tequila is that in order for it to be like sweet enough to make alcohol out of it, it needs to reach maturity, right? Like,
yeah.
But if it gets too mature, it starts to reproduce. When you reproduce, it grows a tree out of it, basically. The females. Some of them are males, some of them are females. It's really interesting. They're like plants to have genders. Sorry, not gender, sexes. But the one that grows the tree, by that point, it's too late. Because basically, the plant has been saving the sugar to create this tree. Yeah. So once it's done, there's no more sugar in the heart of it to produce alcohol. But if it's too young, it doesn't have enough sugar inside. So you need to have the right age. And it tends to be an average 8 years. So in order to produce any bottle of tequila, we're talking about 8 years just for the plant to be ready. So if you think about it, when you're making something like a whiskey or vodka or anything, you're just waiting for grains to grow, and that's a few months. Then you can basically create the vodka within, I don't know, a few months of planting the seeds for the grain. And then when you add whiskey, you just add the aging. So an 8-year-old whiskey hasn't even, like, tequila hasn't even been made, and the plants are still, like, being taken care of.
Yeah. So you get to the agave fields. There's a guy called El Jimador, right? He is a gnarled looking dude. And they have these gnarled
friendly.
They're super friendly, but they work in the sun. They've got these big scythe-like things. It's like a hoe, and that's called?
Koa.
A koa. I'm like, see, this is working.
I'm serious.
So they have this koa, and they basically hit all the... It basically looks like a big aloe plant, almost. And they're peeling off all the leaves. They dig up with the koa. They dig up the pineapple now, a piña.
The piña, yes.
So you pick it up, and if you carry it yourself, if you're not used to this stuff, it actually is very... It's almost like touching poison ivy.
Not so bad because it goes away faster. It's not
on the person. Like, I'm super sensitive to stuff.
Oh, really? For me, it only, like, itches, like, at the moment, but, like, 20 minutes later, it's gone. I haven't seen anyone have to go home and put a lot of ointments or anything. Like,
no, but for me, it was pretty bad. I had to drink myself out of it.
Well.
I had to get the blood, I could get the thinned blood, and then it worked. That's a good way of antihistamining yourself.
Yeah, because basically agave is like a plant to survive, like, adapt itself to survive. And it created this chemical in it to avoid rodents from biting into it. So it basically, I think it's all mammals, but if you bite into it or you hold it, it gives you kind of like a rash. It has like a little chemical.
So what they do is they take the piña, they put it in the back of a truck with a bunch of other piñas, and then they bring it to a place where they actually roast the piñas. And that smell is just next level good.
It's like grassy maple syrup.
Yeah, exactly. Grassy maple syrup. They take the roasted piña out. And if you're doing like at a traditional place, they have this big stone wheel called a tahona. And basically the tahona is like this big wheel. It's a stone and it has like these grooves in the ground. They put all the agave piñas that are roasted and they just basically grind it. There's a donkey that pulls it and it goes in a circle. And this is obviously, you know, not the modern technique, but this is the one when you see people do it.
The places that still use tahonas, to be classic, they don't use a donkey anymore. They use a little truck thingy, little cart.
I saw an Altos, young lady. I saw a donkey.
Yeah, but they don't produce all the tequilas.
No.
That's just for the tourists to see. Like, in general, they use a little...
Dear listener, I was trying to paint you a picture of a beautiful, romantic Mexico where...
It's a little ATV, okay, that goes around now.
Where dreams still come true, where Anna's dark, twisted, a city of God kind of Mexico.
You would take a lot of donkeys. No, some very small producers...
Working teams.
Some very small producers still.
No, I mean, I was at Altos, and they have the demonstration tahona, right? So they grill it all out. You have this stuff that's left over after they squish all the juice out of the piña, and it's called, what is it called? It's so delicious.
I actually forgot the name of that.
But you could eat it, and it's like almost like maple candy, but like a grassier maple candy.
Yeah, you can eat like the thing around the fibers. Lot of the producers will use the fibers after to either feed animals or to like fertilize the soil. And then with the liquid, they will let it ferment.
Ferment in open vats.
Open wooden vats, usually.
Open wooden vats, yeah.
And have you drank that?
Yep.
It's delicious.
It's so good. When you walk into a tequila distillery, it's much different than other distilleries. Like, everything's bubbling and alive, but, like, the smell is really pleasant. Versus some distilleries,
sweet, yeah.
There's, like, a fung to it. Like, I've told people this before. Like, if you go to Ireland and you're fortunate enough to go to the Jameson Distillery in County Cork, not Dublin, the real one, County Cork, there's black mold on the walls everywhere. And it's just obvious, been operating for centuries. But there's a certain distinct funk to it. In a tequila distillery, that's a really nice, pleasant smell. Now you go from there, they start bottling after it's all fermented. They water it down. They put it through the still. Bob's your uncle. You have a bottle of tequila.
Yes. Usually tequila is distilled twice. And depending on the producer, they wet a little bit of water because, again, depends on the location and the mash and the... You know, depending on everything, the alcohol content will be close to like 50% and sometimes 40-something. But the tequila production has regulations on how much alcohol. It has to be a minimum of, don't quote me on this, I think 35 or 38, and a maximum of 50. Or, again, around like
yeah,
up a minus 3 here. So they add a little bit of water. They balance that out. And most quality tequilas won't add anything else to it. Some brands, depending on the market, they can add a little bit of caramel, a little bit of sugar. There are very specific limits in the rules, so they can only add very small amounts. Sometimes coloring, if you want to balance all the bottles, should be the same color, you can add a little bit. But again, there's specific regulations. And
poquito más.
But if you are at home and you wonder, yes, it's all those rules, but who knows if they follow it. Tequila production is so serious that all the places that produce it, they will send somebody that works for the Regulatory Council of Tequila to go check on it very often. And they'll check every step of the production to make sure that all the rules are being followed. And they will do chemical analysis on the batches to make sure that they didn't change it after the guy left and all that. They'll check every stage. Even aging, when you put to age, the government, not the government, they are part of the government, but they're specific to tequila. They'll put a sticker over the barrel, and if that sticker is broken, it means that it's been opened and therefore might have been tampered with, so that barrel can't be used anymore.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that it's amazing that it's very good that it's so serious. I mean, it's a serious thing. Like, tequila is fantastic and it needs to be protected. Now, with that said, what is, like, I found, like, I never had this before until I moved here. Like, we have a lot of football teams that come through that we support, and they drink ice-cold tequila. And I know you hate ice-cold tequila.
Yeah, I'm a room temp person, yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind an ice-cold. If it's bad tequila, I don't mind ice-cold tequila.
I think the problem for me is that when you make alcohol too cold, it gets that creamy, like,
yeah,
texture. And for vodka or something without flavor, it kind of works. But for that flavor of tequila, it always doesn't go down right. Like,
doesn't hit
when tequila is like room temp and not warm. Obviously, warm alcohol is just a no for me, unless it is like a hot toddy, right? Like, but no, it's, you lose a lot of the black pepper, the grassiness, the spiciness of tequila when it's really cold, and you just get that back mouth feel. It just doesn't work for me. Like, I like it room temp.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I like tequila except for hot. I like it anyway. I could get it like. Even, like, tequila in coffee isn't bad. Like, a Mexican coffee isn't the
delicious
worst thing. But I think it has to be with another element. It can't just be hot for hot itself. But, I mean, with that said, I mean, if that's your horror's ice tequila, then I've got an F&B horror story.
I'm waiting for this one, yeah.
I took my transition. That was good, right?
Good segue.
I was trying to figure out how to segue that. Okay, so I've got a real F&B horror story.
F&B.
That happened to me actually last week. So basically, we were slammed here. It was last Saturday. We're absolutely positively slammed. And all the staff are running around. We all have little POSs so they could take orders and pay for it right away. And generally, everything was good. About 9:30, 10 o'clock. It's really hot last Saturday. Not really hot, but it was like warm at night.
Summer day, yeah.
It was summer night. Of course, all of our internet, all of our, basically our control tower burns out in the office. So we lose half of our lights. We lose all of the internet, all that fun stuff. Everybody's still ordering. Our POS system still works. It's on its own, like, internal Wi-Fi thing or its own hardline
network, yeah.
It's on its own network. So it's working fine, but we can't charge anybody. So I'm trying to figure out this light situation. I'm trying to figure out the music. Because all of a sudden, like, if you're in a busy bar and the music stops, if you're a patron, you might not realize it right away. But generally, it starts driving you crazy in a little weird background way.
Oh, it's just really uncomfortable, yeah.
And for those of us that actually pay attention when they are working, they know there's no music on or there is music on. So there's no music. Half the signs in the restaurant went out, but the kitchen lights are working fine. The bar lights are working fine. The bar doesn't need any power, but all, like, half the electricity is gone. But thankfully, the kitchen was still able to cook. People are still able to take orders. We just can't take payments. So I'm scrambling to find a solution in the back office. I'm like Captain, I'm like Scotty from Star Trek, trying to reroute power. And my staff are like, how do they pay? And I was like, hey guys, take your phones out, hotspot the POSs.
Yeah.
And everybody looked at me and like, I invented light. I was like, guys, just, you
oh
have
God,
phones?
So smart.
They're like, oh my God, how did you think about it? I was like, because you have phone, you have hotspot, do it. Oh, wow. And then, like, that got kind of sorted out. This is like all in the space of like 10, 15 minutes. Finally figured out how to reroute half the power. So we have the music back on. We have the internet back on because the music is Spotify here. So it relies on the internet, even though all the music is downloaded. But then the music tower is also, like, the actual audio stuff is all connected to the back. Anyway, long story short, get everything back on. Go outside. There's a guy yelling. And I was like, what's the matter? He's like, I've been waiting an hour. Nobody's been waiting an hour. People that say they're waiting an hour, like, which,
who you'll be waiting 20 minutes. Stops.
I've been waiting an hour. Okay, what are you waiting for? I've been waiting an hour. Okay, what are you waiting for? I've been waiting an hour. I was like, great. I established that with you. I've been waiting an hour. I was like, dude, you're going to wait another hour. What are you waiting on? Oh, frozen margarita. And I was like, oh, cool. Here, boom. And he was like, oh, and I was like, hey, you just told me that right away. Don't say I've been waiting an hour, like wasting my time.
At this point, you just want to complain. Yeah.
And I was like, here, here's your frozen margarita. I put some tequila on top for him. I was like, here you go. Basic, as the owner, I could literally say, here you go, fuck off. But I didn't do that. I was like, here you go. Here's your margarita. There's tequila on it. And then I just sat down at the table and drank them with everybody else. But it was like crisis averted, but it was a horror story because if we didn't like think fast, that could have gone south quickly because when the power goes out, you have to close your tickets as fast as humanly possible and like get a plan of action going. Especially if you had a couple of frenettes in, you know, because you don't expect it. Nobody can expect a power outage. But I mean, Anna, has that happened to you?
Yes, but weird. It happened in my entire block where the bar was. Like the entire block just went dark. And the payment and all that, we could use our phones. The problem is no light. So we were there just in the dark. I actually have photos of it. The whole bar was just dark, but I had some candles, and the little like tea candles. So we just lit up candles everywhere and we just used our phones for everything. And we kept rocking. And then later the lights all came back up. But no idea why. It was like a city issue. Like,
yeah. No, that happened actually. I'm thinking about it. That happened to me once in San Francisco. I was the bar manager at a place called Shanghai 1930. And it was underground, so literally you had to walk down a set of stairs. It was right at Embarcadero area, for those who know San Francisco. And it was a jazz club, super cool jazz club. So jazz players, I mean, they're plugged in, but they could play a lot of stuff acoustically.
Yeah.
But all the power went out in the block. And the firefighters were like driving around. They went downstairs and they said, hey, guys, there's no power for like an hour or two. And this is like 11 p.m. on a Friday, of course, right? Super slam. So we started, like, this is back in the day, so... We had the old school credit card machines. We have like,
oh my god, those paper ones.
The paper ones, like super old school. Nobody had a cell phone back then, or if you did, it wasn't like it is now, right?
A flip phone at best.
And so like we were like, the bar doesn't need electricity to work. We were no blender bar, so we can make all of our drinks. We were fine. Kitchen staff, they couldn't cook anymore. The kitchen was done. The waiters, obviously no kitchen, no need for a waiter, right? They were just basically cocktail servers for us. And it ended up being a really fun time. Like everybody just kind of stayed and paid. And this is back in the day when people still had cash, too. So, like, we actually made a lot of tips. It was a fun story, but, like, in the beginning, we're like, oh, shit, we have no power. Let's all drink Fernet as fast as we can.
No one can see us. No cameras.
See us, yeah. But, I mean, I'm sure those listeners at home, I'm sure you guys have some power outage horror stories as well.
And, Logan, before we wrap it up, should we do a Reddit story?
Fudge, yeah.
All right, so I have a tequila-related Reddit story.
Okay.
All right, it's from Am I the Asshole? So the title is, Am I the Asshole for Selling My Roommate's Bottle of Tequila? The story goes like this. Title isn't as bad as it seems. Let me just get into details. I do not have any money right now. I don't get any money until Monday, which is 4 days. I'm without food or gas money. My roommate goes out for food every day and is always having the time of his life. I think his parents pay for all of his stuff. I am assuming this because he's also in a frat. I don't have any food in my fridge. I literally have eggs, grapes, and some carrots. I am hungry, and I just needed something to eat. I don't feel like begging on the streets for food. Anyways, my roommate has his bottle of tequila in the kitchen. The entire 5 months we live together, he has never opened or touched it. It's literally just collecting dust. I decided to take it upon myself to sell to some guys I met downstairs who aren't 21 yet, so I can make some quick buck. Obviously, I'm going to overcharge them because they can't get alcohol anywhere else, and it's a decent-sized bottle of tequila. I got about $45 for the bottle. It took my roommate 2 days before he notices that someone took it. After freaking out on me, I tried to shift the blame to his frat friends or maybe the girl he brought home a couple nights ago. After some questioning, he still insisted that I took it. I finally got annoyed with his pestering and I said that yes, I took it so I could eat, because food is more important than alcohol. He goes on a rant calling me a piece of shit and saying how his cousin got that bottle for him when they went on a trip. It's invaluable, and that they were supposed to share it together when he gets back from his active duty. I guess he's trying to guilt trip me or something, because you can literally just buy one online or get a new one from the liquor store. is not the last bottle of tequila in the world. He then calls the apartment manager and says that I stole something that he owns, and I think that that's so BS. I already tried to reimburse him, but he asked for $130 worth of tequila, and I am dirt broke. I already spent the money on food and gas that I needed. How is the blame being shifted on me? How does everyone feel about the situation? Am I the asshole?
You got to read what the people wrote. Give the answers first, because...
Well, the first comment is, you're the asshole. Point blank. You stole. And that's an asshole move. Also, pro tip, when someone has a liquor bottle collecting dust, usually means it's special. You fucked up big time, and you need to use the money to buy another bottle of the exact tequila, regardless of how much it costs. You 1,000% without a doubt the asshole here. And he has 5,000 upvotes.
Yeah, I mean, I think last time we talked about this, I was very vehemently anti this person. And I still am. I mean, you stole the bottle.
You lied.
You lied. You sold the bottle to children. Like, so you broke two laws. I mean, you could have, like we were saying, do you know it's worth $45? Is it worth $130?
No, I think he just thought about a bottle of tequila in the convenience store, like on the liquor store, is maybe $20, but I want to really overcharge here, so I'm going to charge $45, and that's it.
Yeah, and like those kids could have been getting a steal.
Yeah, the guy said, I want $130, which means that that bottle might have been like $100, but he wants more for his stress.
Or it could have been $130. I mean, there are expensive bottles of tequila. It's not like tequila, especially we don't know what kind of tequila it is. Now, this person, I think, is an asshole. I'm surprised the roommate didn't kick him out.
I think he tried because he talked to the management company from the building, right? Might be some sort of student accommodation that you have to, like, in college.
No, because if it was college, they couldn't have alcohol in a dorm.
No, but maybe not a dorm, but maybe one of those places where you get roommates assigned to you that you just pay for your room, right? And you kind of, like, have roommates. So kind of like a communal kind of, the communal spaces are, like, shared. So maybe something like that. But also, he had a sentimental value. He was going to have it when he's... Cousin of the boy comes back, right?
The guy that did it is a scumbag. Like, who cares if your roommate is having fun and in a frat?
Also, you have eggs, carrots, and grapes. You can make
meal. That's to poor people that don't have anything.
Also, dude, go buy some ramen.
Yeah, buy ramen. You have a job. You're just not getting paid till Monday. So you had to rob somebody else.
And, like, you cannot borrow $5 to eat ramen for the next few days from your friend. Like, if your friend is so well off, as you say, there's no shame in borrowing $5. Like,
yeah, I mean, it reads like a petty, jealous person.
Yeah, it just reads like he had a thing for his roommates. Like, how dare you, like, be okay and I'm struggling. Yeah. No, I also agree. Totally the asshole.
100% the asshole.
You wanted some asshole stories? There you go.
That's an asshole story. On that post, did the guy ever respond or no?
I didn't do an investigation, but I feel like he got really defensive at people. I feel like he replied complaining.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I got it. You got to send me the links. I got to see that.
I just have a feeling. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we all agree on that note. What an asshole. But tequila... not an asshole.
No, tequila is amazing.
Tequila is amazing. And with that, guys, we'll leave you. This has been another great episode of China on the Rocks. I've been Logan.
I'm Anna.
Like us, subscribe, and follow us. We are on every favorite podcast thing we can find. If you're on Spotify, hold down the podcast, and you could actually leave a comment on Spotify. We also have digital transcriptions of every podcast, so you could read along and enjoy, guys. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.